I agree there is discrimination that does exist. However, our courts are already clogged with cases which many times only lead to more divisiveness.
What is going to be the message to the young people of this country? Our message is that you should not discriminate.
It's really about this guy trying to find a roommate in a very strange time.
I can read between the lines. Clean, quiet, responsible, seeks male, gay.
Well, gay is charged.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Rights watchdogs defend tabloid outed Ugandans, a decade of debate on U.S. workplace discrimination, and a different perspective on 9/11 from WTC View. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 9th, 2006. There are new developments and stories out of both Uganda and Ghana that we reported on in recent weeks. Human Rights Watch and the International Lesbian and Gay Association have joined local activists in Uganda to condemn a tabloid newspaper's publication of the names of several men whom the paper said are gay. The banner headlined story has queer advocates fearing a government crackdown in the country where sodomy is punishable by life in prison. Human Rights Watch researcher Jessica Stern said in a statement this week that President Yoweri Museveni's government routinely threatens and vilifies lesbians and gays and subjects sexual rights activists to harassment. At a moment when sensational publicity has spread fear among a whole community, she continued, the authorities must exercise their responsibility to protect, not persecute. The list was published last month in the tabloid newspaper Red Pepper, which claimed it needed to expose how the terrible vice known as sodomy is eating up our society. It also published details of venues popular with gays and lesbians and has said it might publish a list of suspected lesbians.
The 45 men listed by the newspaper last month included army officers, priests, university lecturers, entertainers, bankers, students, and lawyers. At least five of them were arrested after publication of the list, and more have reportedly gone into hiding. A regional newspaper this week published the name and photo of one man it said the police are hunting in what it called a crackdown on gays who are reportedly on the verge of overthrowing the straight sex generation. It also urged public cooperation to nab him before he pollutes the population. The newspaper said the man's lover had already been arrested. Sexual Minorities Uganda has defiantly circulated a letter of protest to the country's media, saying it was making a loud call to everyone who believes in the rights of human beings to stand up and protest along with us to put an end to such injustices against LGBTI and other marginalized people in Uganda. Attacks on political freedoms in the country, which is rife with economic problems and internal conflicts, have included the arrest and beating of opposition members of parliament.
The president of the Gay and Lesbian Association of Ghana said this week that the media made up stories of an international LGBT conference that was supposedly to be held this month in Accra. Patrick McDonald's told the Crusading Guide newspaper that his members were unaware of any such conference and that the media had fueled public hatred toward lesbians and gays by fabricating the story. The speculation began last week when the Interior Minister announced that the government was going to ban the conference. His remarks were welcomed by many leading Christian and Muslim clergy in Ghana, some of whom had apparently contacted government officials to complain about the conference.
Lawmakers in Latvia this week rejected a bill that sought to ban homosexual propaganda in the mass media. The populist Latvia First Party had prepared draft amendments to laws that govern the nation's media. The measures would have made it illegal to publish supportive articles about gays and lesbians or interviews with them in which they talk about their lives or civil rights. The changes were necessary, the party said in a statement, to ensure that the mass media do not weaken the role of the family institution, do not split society, and do not create a misconception about a group of individuals claiming special treatment due to their beliefs. Many pundits said the proposed amendments contravened Latvian and international law, and speculated that Latvia First was trying to tap into homophobia in the Baltic state ahead of next month's general election. Latvia First currently has 13 seats in the 100-member parliament, and a party member is the coalition government's interior minister. In July, he persuaded the Riga City Council to ban what would have been the country's second pride parade, citing alleged threats to security. Latvian gay men, lesbians, and their supporters, along with activists from Europe and North America, staged alternative pride events, including an LGBT religious service and meetings at a hotel. People coming and going from the events, including clergy who conducted the religious service, were confronted by Christian fundamentalists, ultranationalists, and neo-Nazis, some of whom threw eggs, rotten food, and human feces at them. Seven of the attackers have thus far been fined the equivalent of about $65 for petty hooliganism. Linda Freimane, a spokesperson for the pride organizing group Mosaica, called the punishments inadequate, saying the assaults were an incitement to hatred, and that the attacker should have been charged with criminal hooliganism. Latvia's general prosecutor agrees and is attempting to have the decisions annulled, and the attackers retried under criminal statutes.
But the LGBT rainbow flag will be proudly flying over Taipei's City Hall on September 17th, in what officials call a first for any Asian city, according to a report this week in the Taipei Times. The landmark event will be part of an annual festival called LGBT Civil Rights Movement Queer Friendly Taipei, which has been hosted since 2000 by the city's Department of Civil Affairs with an annual budget of about $30,000. Wang Ping of Taiwan's Gender Sexuality Rights Association, which is helping to organize the festival, told the Times that the flag raising will be followed by lesbi-gay rights forums that afternoon in the city council chamber and an art exhibition later in the month. A pride parade is planned for September 30th, along with a mass same-gender wedding ceremony to push for legal marriage equality.
Canada's Bloc Québécois has vowed to stand united against Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper's plan for parliamentary review of the 2005 vote that legalized same-gender marriage in the country. All of the party's 51 members in the 308-member House of Commons will be expected to vote in favor of marriage equality in any reconsideration of the matter. The 29 members of the New Democratic Party are planning to do the same. The Defend Marriage Coalition, an alliance of 13 so-called traditional marriage, family, and religious groups, announced this week that they'll be investing tens of thousands of dollars for public campaigning and to lobby MPs to support reconsideration of the issue. Harper promised during his successful campaign earlier this year that if the House adopts a resolution to reopen the debate, the government will introduce legislation to restore the traditional definition of marriage while respecting existing same-sex marriages. Recent polling has found that 62% of Canadians oppose any attempt to take away gay and lesbian couples' access to marriage.
Meanwhile, a pernicious Conservative Party MP's private member's bill in what may be Canada's most conservative province, Alberta, has been rejected. The measure, which would have forbidden anyone from being prosecuted for speaking out on or acting on their beliefs against marriage equality, died for a second time last week in the provincial parliament. Bill 208 would also have put limits on discussion of the subject in schools. Opponents said the bill attempted to enshrine in law the dehumanization of gays and lesbians. They said it would have given employers carte blanche to fire gay or lesbian employees and landlords to evict lesbian and gay tenants simply because of their sexual orientation. Both the province's Liberals and New Democrats condemned the bill as an affront to the rights and dignity of lesbi-gay Albertans.
But in what's being called an unprecedented move, top-level British professional soccer team Manchester City Football Club has paid four figures to join the Diversity Champions program of the leading national queer advocacy group Stonewall, according to a report in the Observer newspaper. The action commits the team to recruit gays and lesbians to work at the stadium, reach out to lesbi-gay fans, and to ban homophobic language. A statement issued by Alastair McIntosh, the club's chief executive, said, "We want to send a welcoming message to gay, lesbian, and bisexual supporters. Be inclusive and be a progressive employer." According to The Observer, which said McIntosh's sister is an open lesbian, the move could lead to a dramatic change of attitude in the macho world of football, which is regarded as one of the last bastions of homophobia.
And finally, speaking of open lesbians, Ellen DeGeneres will be hosting the 79th Annual Academy Awards telecast on February 25th, producer Laura Ziskin told reporters this week. There is no more challenging hosting job in show business. It requires someone who can keep the show alive and fresh and moving, as well as someone who is a flat-out great entertainer. DeGeneres has twice hosted the Primetime Emmy Awards telecast, co-hosted it in 1994, and has won a slew of those trophies for her popular weekday TV talk show. It will be her first time as host of the Oscars telecast. When Laura Ziskin called, I was thrilled, DeGeneres said. There's two things I've always wanted to do in my life. One is to host the Oscars. The second is to get a call from Laura Ziskin. You can imagine that day's diary entry.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 9th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm Rick Watts.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Thank you.
That was without cue cards, people.
From real life to stage to screen and now DVD, a gay writer-director tells his 9/11 story later in the program. Many critics of the U.S. LGBT movement's current emphasis on marriage equality cite the lack of federal workplace discrimination protections as one of the other priorities they say are being forsaken. Those same two issues were vying for attention in the U.S. Senate 10 years ago this month, when what started out as one bill became DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. The arguments for and against ENDA in the Senate, a first-time ever discussion of lesbo-gay civil rights on the floor of either house of Congress, sound like they could have been recorded last week. Here's how Pacifica Radio's Verna Avery Brown reported the day's impassioned debate on September 6, 1996.
Today, the Senate debated the merits of Democrat Ted Kennedy's bill, which bars employers from using sexual orientation as a basis for hiring, firing, or demoting a worker. The same protection already extended on the basis of race, gender, or disabilities.
There are not adequate existing laws to protect individuals who experience that kind of a discrimination. This legislation is a very measured, targeted piece of legislation to deal with bigotry and discrimination in the workplace, carefully drafted, carefully targeted to that issue.
Kennedy's bill exempts the armed forces and nonprofit religious organizations. Statistics will not be used to show anti-gay discrimination, and quotas are prohibited. Still, Republican Nancy Kassebaum of Kansas says the bill goes too far in legal remedies and victims should just get back their jobs and back pay.
I agree there is discrimination that does exist. However, our courts are already clogged with cases which many times only lead to more divisiveness and disruption in the workplace.
Illinois Democrat Paul Simon, co-sponsor of the bill, argued that the Senate should be creating job opportunities, not limiting them. And he recalled the testimony of one woman who had been fired because of her sexual orientation.
And I'm going to mention the company's name, the Cracker Barrel. I haven't been into a Cracker Barrel restaurant since that woman testified, and I'm not going to go into one until we pass legislation like this. But her separation notice read, let me repeat it again, this employee is being terminated due to a violation of company policy. The employee is gay. That was a woman who worked as a cook. Very low wages. When she testified before our committee, she was working part-time cutting firewood. What kind of a society are we building? People were not made by God all the same. Some of us have brown hair, some of us red hair, some of us black hair, some blonde. Some were made with a different sexual orientation than most of us have. And we should not deny them employment opportunities.
But opponents argued the bill's exemptions for churches and nonprofit organizations don't extend far enough, leaving out businesses that might have moral objections to homosexuality. Oklahoma Republican Don Nichols.
Well, what about a Christian bookstore, for example? Christian bookstore for profit doesn't fall under the exemption. But it's a for-profit bookstore, Christian bookstore, or Jewish bookstore, Muslim bookstore. they would be liable to be sued if they didn't hire somebody who was openly gay. And that may be very reprehensible to them and their basic beliefs. And yet they could be sued. What about the Boy Scouts? They've had a policy and they've been sued. Didn't even have sexual orientation under the Civil Rights Act, and yet they're in court and have been in court, have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to maintain their policy. They do not want to have openly homosexuals as their scout masters and leaders and employees in their organization.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein argues that similar legislation she passed in California some 20 years ago has never drawn complaints from the business community.
Is it inappropriate conduct for anybody to be kissing on their job as a waiter or a waitress? The answer is yes, it's inappropriate conduct, regardless of whether they're gay or straight. The same thing goes for clothing. If it's inappropriate to wear certain things in the workplace, this is true whether you're gay or whether you're straight. So a lot of the hobgoblins that are expressed by the other side, that this will open the world to all kinds of inappropriate activity, in my view, based on 25 years of watching a piece of legislation which I authored, which was passed, which I presided over as mayor of a city, is simply not correct.
Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy authored the measure and rose to its defense.
What is going to be the message to the young people of this country? Our message is that you should not discriminate. You should not be part of a sense of bigotry in this nation. That is what is the underlying theme of this legislation. Mr. President, I was around here not that long ago when we were making progress on eliminating discrimination, and we found out that a number of years ago when we were talking about knocking down the walls of discrimination on race, we said, well, blacks don't work hard. Blacks are lazy. Blacks aren't competent. They're different. Why do we need to provide any kind of protection for them? Well, we did. We don't even hear a dispute about that particular issue at this time. Then we had the issue about protecting women. Women are weak. Women belong in the home. Women are not smart enough. Why should women be involved in athletics? We passed Title IX, and we all celebrated when we got gold medals in basketball, softball, and saw the success of our magnificent women Olympians, our gymnasts and others in this last Olympics. No one's making those arguments. And now we have the stereotyping of gay and lesbians, those child molesters that are out there. Everyone who is gay can't wait to get their hands on a young child. And we are stereotyping it for one more time. Mr. President, I thought we knew better than that.
That was Edward Kennedy in September 1996 arguing for his Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, in a report by Verna Avery Brown. To no one's surprise, the notorious Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, passed the Senate on September 10th of that year by a landslide 85-14 vote, even greater than the earlier 5-1 margin it enjoyed in the House. ENDA failed by one vote in the Senate on the same day, although it certainly would have been soundly defeated in the even more conservative Republican-controlled House. DOMA was signed into law without fanfare in the wee hours of the night by President Bill Clinton. The late Senator Paul Simon did live to see the day that Cracker Barrel Restaurants rescinded its ban on gay and lesbian employees. The latest version of ENDA, despite bipartisan support, still languishes in the current Republican-controlled Congress.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
A number of films have been released in the 5 years since the events of 9/11/2001. This Way Out's Steve Pride brings us his favorite and probably most unconventional of the pack. WTC View was just released on DVD and is screening this month on U.S. Cable's Logo Channel.
Hey, it's me. Leave a message.
Hello. I'm ringing about the advert in this week's Village Voice. I know it's a dreadful time, but if you could give me a ring, I'd be quite grateful. I'm at the St. Regis Hotel.
Hello there, this is Connor. I'm interested in checking out the apartment share you listed online. You know, I already live below 14th Street, so it's not a problem for me to get there at all. It could be great to see it this afternoon. Now
would
be good.
Hey, calling about the apartment thing. This might be bad timing and all, but I need to find a place soon, as my girlfriend's giving me the boot. So I wanted to... That's her on the other line. All right. You got my number now, so let me know when you're showing it. Okay, later.
In the wake of 9/11 theme movies, like Paul Greengrass's Real Time, United 93, and Oliver Stone's heavy-handed World Trade Center, writer-director Brian Sloan's WTC View is a refreshing, stripped-down take on the after-effects of the tragedy without the special effects. Based on his astonishing play, Brian's film is about a young gay man who places an ad on September 10th looking for a new roommate to share his two-bedroom apartment. Not only is it in Soho, it has a great view of the Twin Towers.
I'm Brian Sloan, filmmaker and writer.
What was the genesis of the film?
Well, it basically was inspired by a very true life situation. On September 10th, right before I went to bed that night, I'd put an ad online on the Village Voice website for a roommate. I had been trying to find a roommate for about a month, I guess, and had not really been focused on it. I was just kind of emailing friends and calling people, and I wasn't really doing a big search. I had a lot of other things going on at the time, and I just wasn't focused on it. So I really, the 15th of September was coming up, so I put this ad out. And then the next day, you know, September 11th, everything happened that happened. My apartment is in the Soho part of New York, so we weren't directly affected, but, you know, it was something that happened basically in my neighborhood. So I left the apartment. I stayed with my boyfriend out in Brooklyn. And a couple days later, I called my answering machine, and it was the strangest mix of these frantic messages of my friends wondering where I was, mixed in with people saying, oh, hi, I'd like to come see your apartment on September 12th. And that, to me, just was extraordinary. I didn't know what to make of it even. I just knew it was very bizarre and unusual. So 6 to 8 months later, I just started thinking about those messages and that whole situation of me trying to find the roommate. And I thought it could be an interesting way in to explore what happened on 9/11 for the people who lived in Manhattan, not necessarily the people, the many victims who died, which is, I think, the story most people know. And this, you know, is meant to be the story people don't know.
Talk about the transition from stage to screen.
Well, I started writing it as a play, really, because I thought there was no way this could ever be a movie. The way I sort of envisioned it was very much these people coming to see this apartment, different people coming in to visit, and basically telling their stories and having this conversation about what was going on in the world and how that was affecting everyone's lives. And I started writing it as a play because I couldn't see it as anything but a play. And then when we did the play, we got some really great notices, but we had trouble finding anyone commercially in the theater world who wanted to transfer it because there had been two big 9/11 themed plays previous to this one, and they had been huge flops. And the feeling in the New York commercial world was nobody wanted to see a play about 9/11. So then we started, you know, exploring it as a film, and fortunately found some investors to make it happen.
In WTC View, we are introduced to Eric's best friend, Josie, whose husband has lost interest in her since 9/11. We learn of Eric's earlier breakup with his boyfriend, which threw him off balance even before the horrific events outside the window. And we meet the prospective roomies he interviews.
So, you don't have an apartment right now?
My place was down in Battery Park City.
Oh.
I shouldn't say was. It's still there. They just won't let us in yet. Said all the units are covered in dust. Layer of toxic crap on everything.
Were you there when it happened?
No, thank God. I would have freaked out. I mean, not that I didn't freak out, but I mean, you know, it's two blocks away.
So you'd already left for work?
Nah, I was in Jersey City Monday night to meet this chick for a date.
Oh.
Are you gay?
Yeah, but I...
The ad didn't come out and say it. I could read between the lines. Clean, quiet, responsible, seeks male, gay.
Well, gay is charged.
5 years after 9/11, there have been five or six plays and a handful of movies dealing with the tragedy. But Brian Sloan believes that WTC View is a bit different.
Most of them tend to go at 9/11 in a very direct way and tend to tell people things they already know, and they tend to be, you know, a little melodramatic. And I think that is off-putting, I think, to audiences, to a modern audience, especially given the fact that everyone is so familiar with these events. And the thing that I think made WTC View unique was that it really takes a more sideways approach. It's really about this guy trying to find a roommate in a very strange time. The 9/11 aspect of it is certainly there and is certainly a big part of the show, but the show has a dramatic focus, which is not 9/11. It's about him and his apartment and his relationship with his boyfriend as well, and how that's being affected by all this stuff.
What would you like people to take away from your film?
The events of 9/11 were so massive, I think sometimes it's hard for people to even get a grasp of what happened. The thing I was going for, I guess, in WTC View was to really show on a very personal and intimate level one person's struggle with all this, and how even the death of one person can really throw people's lives asunder. And I think when you look at the play in that context and then think, well, this happened to 3,000 other people, basically, then I think hopefully you can sort of understand really the immenseness of that event. I think it's still something people don't quite get in a way. And part of that's because of all the things that have happened since then have sort of politicized the events of 9/11. And I want the play to sort of show, in the movie, to show to people that, you know, this was an immense tragedy first and foremost. And I think that's something that's kind of gotten lost in the rush of Afghanistan and Iraq and now these other bombings in other cities and countries around the world. But this is really a pretty immense event, and I think it's still something people are coming to terms with.
This has been a conversation with Brian Sloan, writer-director of I Think I Do and now WTC View. Brian's also the author of the hilarious novels A Really Fine Prom Mess and Tale of Two Summers. More info can be found at briansloan.com and, as always, at stevepride.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. I have known you. I have been.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Charles Hall, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard music from the WTC View soundtrack by Todd Almond and Billy Olitzhauser, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, 2HOT Cobar, New South Wales, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.